He cannot disappear.
He'll be hitting high, but what else can he do? He can't disappear.
In slow motion, it looks a little bit bad, but
accidents happen. They do.
He's done his knees. Well, this is incredible.
And out will come the magic sponge. There it is.
No scissors, no tape. Just a dirty old sponge, and it's worked. The sponge can wipe out a pandemic. It can cure us all.
Yes, welcome again to the Magic Sponge Podcast, the miracle cure for all your rugby league injury issues. My name is Brian Seeney. Most of you know me as the guy behind the NRL Physio social media pages. My fellow NRL big fan and physio himself, James Kurtz, back again, mate. Bit of a quieter week. How are you?
Going well, Brian. Going really well. Origin team's got named tonight, so watching and analysing that with eagerness. Only a couple of changes for Queensland, which was probably expected, but a whole host of changes for the Blues. So that'll be very interesting to see how they line up 1-17 calm Sunday night in Perth, hey?
Oh, mate, it's just another classic, you know, New South Wales not being, you know, loyal to, you know, just not picking and sticking like Queensland always does, hey?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the other thing that's sort of weird for me is New South Wales have this thing of we need to choose players to neutralise Queensland players. Like Freddie sort of did that in game one when he picked Dan Tupou, when you could argue that Addo Carr was playing really, really good footy. And they sort of tried to do that through the years as well with like GI and try to neutralise, the eight in a row, legends that we had coming through there. But I think when New South Wales go well is when they just get arrogant and they just choose a team where they just go, all right, we're going to try and score 30 on you and good luck keeping up with the firepower. I think that's where they go well. But Freddie hasn't really gone to that plan this year where he did last year. So, yeah, very interested to see how it shakes out on Sunday and then for game three, obviously.
Yeah, mate. No, I just love stirring it up. It's a good time of year. Good fun. So, look, everyone, as always, this is your weekly one-stop shop for all things injury analysis in the NRL. We talk about our take on the in-game injuries from the round just gone, review the big injury and rehab news from those already in the casualty ward, and talk through implications of certain injuries on things like recovery time, performance, supercoach scoring. That's a big reason that we jumped on here is to talk about how those injuries affect your supercoach and fantasy players week in, week out. Look, if you find yourself getting value on this, or if you want an extra edge for your super coach or fantasy sides, or you're just interested in injuries and want a bit more in-depth information, come over to patreon.com/NRLphysio. It's $5 a month. You don't have to join for multiple months. Just come along, see what it's like. I cover pretty much every injury in depth. We've got a good casualty ward over there, which has analysis from me on every single injured player. So yeah, it's a good one. And then all the questions that we answer on here are from our patrons. So, all right, without further ado, mate, let's get stuck into the injuries from round 15.
I don't know exactly what he's done. I would have thought it was an ankle, but I'm just guessing.
He shouldn't be out for a long period of time, and I'm no doctor. We have to wait for the scans, obviously, but that'd be more positive than negative.
Round 15 was the one just gone, Brian. The year's going really, really quick, and to kick things off in terms of round 15 games, Dragons versus Rabbitohs was up first, but there was no major injury concerns from that game. So I was going to just plow ahead and look at the Manly Seagulls versus the Cowboys game. What a great finish that was to that game. Obviously awful if you're an Eagles fan, but great for the neutral observers or the Cowboys fans. So the big concerns here was obviously Reuben Cotter's been well documented through the media about having a fairly high grade hamstring injury, which is going to rule him out at least of Origin 2. And most likely Origin 3 from the way that Billy Slater was talking just on Channel 9 of recent times. The other two people of concern here was Hamiso Taboifadou, and he was concussed from that game. I mean, he was ruled out of Origin, so he might have been someone that had lingering symptoms. And then Maritu Lungi also had a shoulder injury, although he's just been named for Queensland as we go to record here on a Sunday night. Brian, do you want to give us any more detail you have about these three Cowboys players and implications for the Cows and then also Queensland?
Yeah, so I think I'll talk about the two outside backs first because I wouldn't mind having a little discussion about Cotter because I think there's a few interesting points there. But Tao Lungi, I think, should be fine. He hurt his shoulder, but more than likely a burner is what they're saying. So a burner, the nerves get jammed up or the shoulder gets jammed up a little bit. You see the player holding their arm, low and loose, and they're really quite sore. But it pulls up really good quite quickly. No real concerns going into Origin either. There's not really a massive increased risk of injury. Taboifadou, as you said, perfectly summarised. I think the fact that he was ruled out, sort of, you know, he suffered the concussion 9 days out from Origin 2, and he's been ruled out, that pretty much says that, or my way of thinking, unless Billy just didn't want a player with limited prep for the week, but more than likely what it is that Taboi Fodeau was suffering, like, symptoms in the days after, because that means that it delays him moving forward in those six steps, so probably he wouldn't have been fine to get up for next Sunday night. Now, Cotter, as I said, a few interesting points here, and I wouldn't mind bouncing them off you as well. Like, so they've said 3 to 5 weeks. There's been mixed reports of grade 2 and grade 3. So starting on that point for me, I just think it's got to be a grade 2. For it to be 3 to 5 weeks, and outside of anything, you know, they've kind of said, oh, it's not a rupture, it doesn't require surgery. Look, hamstring injuries very rarely require surgery. It's only if it's that proximal rupture where it pulls the tendon away from up near the hip, kind of up the base of the buttocks there, is when you require surgery. But, yeah, just the whole 3 to 5 weeks, like I pretty much, my standard return to play quote for in general for grade 2s is 4 to 6 weeks. Right, like, and so that would be missing 3 to 5 weeks, which is what they've said. But for them to, you know, for there to be stuff floating around about a grade 3, depending on what classification system you're looking at, usually you're talking about at least a complete or close to a complete rupture, or at least 50% torn. I think there's one that's, you know, more than 15 centimeters torn. I'm like, far out, there's no way that guy's coming back in 3 to 5 weeks. Right, I'm not going crazy here, James.
No, I don't think so, mate. I was looking at some of the reports as well, and it was kind of interestingly worded where I think one of them I read was like, well, it's a grade 3, but there's no tendon rupture or anything of that nature. So it didn't really sort of make sense when I was reading it. I sort of was like, well, it's either one or it's the other. So I'm not too sure of the exact, you know, level of damage that Ruben Cotter's sort of facing there. I think you're right, though. I think it sends more in that grade 2 range, which, again, like you just alluded to, it would be 4 weeks on the lower side and 6 weeks on the higher side with that. And then, you know, depending on how he progresses through, it could be anywhere else sort of on the higher side again. So, yeah, bad luck for Ruben Cotter, I think. But, yeah, it was a little bit of a confusing one to get your head around, hey?
Yeah, I think, and I just had a few people asking, like, do you think it could be longer because it's a grade 3? You know, they've said 3 to 5 weeks. And I think at the end of the day, I think if we just assume that it's a grade 2 at this stage, I did see in the Courier Mail, Pete Bedell, our good friend Pete Bedell, wrote something about a grade 2. So I'm assuming grade 2 at this stage, which look like, even then, like a 4 week return to play, I'm pretty sure Origin 3 is in like 3.5 weeks or there and abouts. So yeah, he's going to be a real, real long shot to play. I just don't see them risking it unless, you know, the scanning was read wrong and he progresses a lot better than expected. The other interesting point I wanted to talk about was the fact that there was a report that he was dealing with a hamstring niggle all week at training. You know, he's had a hamstring niggle all week at training and then gone out in a warm-up and it's blown on him. So I just find that, yeah, real, like you know, look, we speak about it all the time on here that, you know, NRL players are playing through, sometimes significant issues week in, week out that we never find out about. But, I just find it surprising the whole, you know, that's a soft tissue, you know, niggle that in the muscle that is probably one of the highest risks of strain. You've got a guy who played 80 minutes in Origin a couple of, you know, like 10 days ago, which is, you know, the fastest game of the year by, you know, if you listen to everybody and all the stats and all that kind of stuff. He's got a hamstring niggle. Yeah, it just surprises me that he was going to run out, I guess. Like, obviously, this is outside looking in kind of stuff. But, yeah, that certainly shocked me that the niggle all week and then, he blows it in the warm-up.
Yeah, very true. I think the other thing with Ruben Cotter was, my understanding with Ruben as well, he's had a history of ACL reconstructions there too. So whether they've used hamstring for that and maybe he's been vulnerable to those sort of injuries in the past, I don't really know a huge amount of that detail. That's just purely me just shooting from the hip there with pure speculation. But yeah, you wonder if he's sort of had something that's been a concern and impacting on his training load through the week, why he would have been risked to play against Manly there. It doesn't make a huge amount of sense in my mind, because I don't know what you're going to sort of stand to gain from that when you've got him, you know, probably playing through Origin there as well. So, yeah, interesting one. Hey, it'll be a bit of watch that space for Ribeiro and Cotter, but also a good scoop by Pete Bedell, friend of the show, Pete Bedell. So good on him to get that detail for Ruben Cotter and his hammy there, mate. Any other points you wanted to make on Ruben Cotter before we move on, Brian?
No, mate, I just wanted to have a bit of a chat about him because I don't think there's too many other notable injuries for the week, so I figured we may as well dive in a bit deep on Ruben and have a bit of a chat. But, yeah, let's keep moving forward, eh?
Yeah, no, that sounds good. I think the next game that we were going to discuss, well, there was nothing that really came of this with the Broncos versus Storm game, so the next game on the NRL slate there was the Sharks beat the Titans, and Paul Turner had a calf injury out of this one. I haven't seen anything documented about severity of injury or anything like that. He's probably not really someone who's super fantasy football relevant to a lot of people listening out there.
You'd be surprised, mate. You'd be surprised if you read my DMs. I think he must be a cheapie in one of the formats because, boy, did I get some questions on him, I tell you.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. To be honest with you, the two weirdest combinations, Paul Turner and Ewan Aitken this week, just going off chops.
Gotcha.
I couldn't tell you how many messages I got asking about when Ewan Aitken's coming back. I'm like, boys, it's a concussion. Yeah. Let him slide. But Paul Turner, look, it's a calf. There wasn't anything, massive there to suggest to me. It's definitely like with a calf, if it's really, really significant, you might go, it's going to be, 6-8 weeks longer. I didn't see something that, necessarily suggested that, but, anywhere between 1 and 6 weeks is a bit hard until scans come back. So yeah, that'll just be a bit of a wait and watch. The one thing with calves is that they do tend to have lingering symptoms a little bit. So even if they initially say, oh, we're hoping to have him back after the rep bye, I wouldn't say it's a certainty just with the nature of calf injuries.
Yeah, good one. I think that's probably all the detail we need to sort of explore there. Then I think we'll probably have a bit more clarity sort of earlier in the week and, once things emerge from the rep round. The Warriors versus Panthers was the next game there, Brian. The Warriors bid farewell to Dolphin Oval with a resounding loss to the Panthers. So hopefully the Dolphins, not the Redcliffe Dolphins, the Dolphins, when they come in next year, put on a few better performances than the Warriors did this year because they were reasonably poor there. But I think they've been away from home for so long. I think we need to give them a bit of slack.
I was just about to say, the one thing I want to say with that is good, so good to see them going home. Like, I know they've been pretty crap this year.
Totally agree.
But, oh, boy, you'd be massive props to them. And I think it's out of sight, out of mind a little bit for people where, the season's just kept going on. So everyone's kind of forgotten about that. But we're talking about guys who've relocated for a long, long period of time now. And that's not easy. So I think they're heading home this week and back in New Zealand for a few games now. So hopefully they knock up a few wins for the home crowd.
Oh, hopefully the home crowd show up big and give them some good support. And I think people need to appreciate as well. They kept the competition alive.
Yeah, 100%.
With the sacrifices they made. So I think there's probably a fairly good argument to sort of do a few things in return for the New Zealand team and the New Zealand fans next year.
Definitely.
Or even later this year, I would say. Apart from that, Brian, we'll move forward because there wasn't any injury concerns from that game. That was just a big win by the Penrith Panthers as they roll on. Eels versus Roosters was next up, and Nat and Egan Butcher both had concussions from this game. We probably don't need to discuss these in too much detail because they'll just work their way through the protocols. Neither of those players, I don't think, will play over the rep round, to my understanding. So they've probably got a couple of weeks up their sleeve before they play again. I think the Roosters play again on July 1, so they've got the best part of 14 days to get through those protocols. So you'd imagine there shouldn't be too many concerns with those guys, hey?
Yeah, that's right. I think Egan Butcher did get stretchered off or medicabbed off. So potentially some concerns with the neck there, but we haven't heard anything significant by now. And usually if there was any major concerns, you would have heard. I think no news is good news in this kind of scenario. So I'm assuming both those guys will just have to head through protocols.
For sure. Raiders Knights was the next one, Brian. Tyson Frizzell has a concussion. He wasn't actually named for New South Wales, to my understanding. So we can safely assume he won't be sort of racing the clock to be fit for Origin 2. The other injury concern out of this game was James Schiller, who had a collarbone fracture. Any other updates apart from those ones, Brian?
Yeah, no, that's about it. With Schiller, probably, you know, if it's confirmed, you're looking at minimum 6 weeks. The collarbone's a bit of a tough one to accelerate. So, yeah, minimum 6 weeks, but it can extend out. Some of those collarbone fractures can be pretty nasty and can kind of get out to that 10 to 12 week mark. So just for any Raiders fans out there who are wondering, yeah, it's probably a long stint on the sideline for Schiller.
Yeah, it'd be close to season, wouldn't it, for James Schiller, you'd imagine?
Yeah.
Yeah. Last game, Brian, was Bulldogs versus the West Tigers. Alex Tupou, favourite of the show, he had a fairly nasty concussion there, and he was cleared of neck concerns, I think just after leaving the field there. There was a few other concerns from this game, with Stapatoa having an inversion ankle injury. Kurt Morin had a sort of a sublux sort of mechanism, or maybe dislocation with shoulder instability there. And then David Nofaluma was another one at the end that we probably can sort of speculate on a little bit. Do you want to talk to Alex Twall to start off with, Brian, and we can go through the rest of those in a bit more detail?
Mate, my man, my favourite, Alex Twall. It was, I think everybody was pouring one out in the first minute to sort of see him go down, which was really disappointing. Obviously a concussion, definitely had a concussion, failed his HIA. A little point there, actually, which is worth bringing up, is some people like, oh, he wouldn't have even needed to go through a HIA because he obviously showed Category 1 symptoms on the field. Important part there, and I think it comes around in a bit of the, you know, I guess the rugby league terminology, because coaches say, oh, he actually passed his HIA in the sheds but couldn't come back on. The HIA starts, like, the first question in the HIA is, did they show Category 1 symptoms, right? So if they showed, you know, loss of balance, you know, loss of consciousness, all that kind of stuff on the field, that is part of the HIA. That is failure number one. So when coaches talk about it, they obviously are talking about the in, you know, like once they get in, they do the memory and the balance and all that kind of stuff. Guys can pass that part of the HIA, but that's not the HIA in its entirety. The HIA is literally from the very first moment all the way through. So if he fails, if he shows the symptoms that he did, he fails his HIA pretty much on field. But thankfully, no neck concerns. He came back out. He did go off on a Medicab, so a bit of concern there, but came back out sitting on the bench, so neck is fine, so he'll just have to head through the protocols. Morin with his shoulder, yeah, look, he was indicating himself. Wouldn't surprise me if he's had shoulder issues in the past, just the way he was kind of saying, like, I popped it out. You could almost see him sort of mouthing, like, it came out. So I'd say he'd be looking at, like, best case, if you got a subluxation, you can sometimes see guys come back in, like, 2 to 3 weeks. But for a dislocation, yeah, more that sort of 4 to 6 week end, and then potentially surgery if he's had issues there in the past. Stafford Toa, that was a bit of a nasty one, rolled his ankle. A bit similar to Jeremiah Nanai. So the lateral ankle sprain where foot rolls in, heaps of pain. So potentially he's never had one before. He was like, oh my God, that's so painful. Was able to hobble around for a little bit afterwards, but then eventually came off. But I'd expect him, like, provided no fracture, I'd say there's a good chance he's right after the rep bye. Nofaluma, I'll throw to you, because I didn't see a whole heap of it. I did briefly see in the second half that he was limping a little bit, but what else did you see there?
Yeah, nothing live, Brian, to naked eye. So I was just watching him, just because I like watching David Nofaluma. He's one of my favorite players to watch when he's going around playing well. But he was just sort of hobbled in the second half, and I'm not too sure if it was as a result of a tackle or some sort of traumatic mechanism. Now it was really hard to tell, but might be one just to keep an eye on as things sort of emerge there for David Nofaluma. But he does have a little bit more time up his sleeve to get fit for the next round of footy. So nothing concrete, but yeah, might be a bit of a watch and see.
Yeah, I think the big thing there, just in wrapping up all these injuries, I think any of the boys that aren't involved in next weekend, like I know this is goes without saying, but automatically get a little bit of a bump up, like, because they've got that free week of kind of rehab and stuff like that. They don't have to prepare for a game next week, and that's a real game changer for club performance stuff in how they can treat guys sort of in rehab or conditioning phases like leading into a game, not for a fortnight, because even if there's a game in a week, there's a lot of things they have to do to get up for that. Whereas now they don't have it for 14 days, they can really structure it well. I think like the, for those people looking like a Pappenhausen and a Luttrell, I know we spoke about them at length in previous weeks, but even though they've had COVID, provided that they don't get knocked around by it too much, it's a big win for them. The fact that they've got these kind of 2 weeks to kind of really get some conditioning in, because I would say those guys in, you know, if COVID wasn't around and the rep bye wasn't there, they'd be returning like either this weekend or next weekend, and it'd be, I guess, not rushed, but, you know, it'd be quite quick, whereas now they can take a little bit more time and get their performance and re-injury risk down, get their performance up, re-injury risk down. So, yeah, this week's a really, really good one for anyone in rehab, that's for sure.
Yeah, nicely put. I think just even gives some guys an opportunity just to get some rest into their bodies when they need it from just those little niggles that sort of develop throughout the year. So, yeah, it's definitely a fortunate time of year for those guys that aren't playing rep footy, but also an exciting time as a fan to watch all the rep footy go around. It's always a really good time of year. I think it's something that the NRL needs to keep trying to put time and energy into with representative footy, particularly international footy, because I think there's big scope to improve that. But yeah, it'd be interesting to watch. Hey, so that's the wrap for round 15 in terms of injuries, Brian. We might go on to Patreon now. So as you mentioned earlier, obviously patreon.com/NRL physio is where you want to be if you want to follow Brian, or if you want to get around him for a month or 2 months or for a whole year. That's where you got to find him. That's what you want to do. The questions that come in from Patreon this week, Brian, first one is regarding basically more broadly head injury protocols. So in your opinion, do you think the HIA protocols are functioning well? Do you think it's been successful with the introduction of the bunker doctor, where there's someone having a look at these type of injuries from an independent professional standpoint? How do you think it's all traveling to your perspective?
Yeah, I think this question was sort of asked about, like, they feel like the calls are made inconsistently, and wondering sort of how we viewed it. Look, for me, I think the biggest thing here that I'll cover off straight away is that whenever we're dealing with human beings making subjective decisions, I know there's criteria, so you know that they have to follow, but we're just never going to get consistency, right? It's never going to be perfectly consistent, because person to person, there are always going to be differences. Even if it's the same person, they're going to, you know, on one day they might view something a little bit differently than another. I know I'm guilty of that, you know, in different things in my life, in my professional, you know, I try and keep it as straightforward as possible. But yeah, I think that's the thing, is that unfortunately, and whether it be the bunker making referee decisions or the bunker making calls on concussion, when you've got human beings making subjective decisions, it's just not going to be consistency. And that's why hopefully over the coming years, we're going to have some objective tests brought in. So that's where, you know, as we've spoken about in the past, I think there's things like, you know, putting these goggles over their eyes that measure the eye or the brain's response to stimulus. There's saliva tests, there's blood tests, there's all these different things coming in that, like, what we're looking for is something that takes away that, oh, did he lose his balance or did he not? Or did he, you know, did he get knocked out for a second there or did he not? And once again, one person could say yes and the other person could say no, and you could argue till you're blue in the face. Whereas if you've got a saliva test or a blood test or a, you know, an eye light sensitivity test that says yes, like they were slow on this, or yes, they have suffered a concussion, it takes all the guesswork out of it. So until we get to that point, consistency is going to be really hard. Look, I think the introduction of an independent doctor is good. I don't for a second question the, you know, validity or the I guess the, like, where the club doctors stand. I think they obviously prioritize their patients number one, which are the players. But I think, look, the more, you know, not the more, like, there's obviously a limit to how many you can have, but having an independent doctor in there to help the club doctors who are on the side of the field, you know, they're dealing with, you know, so many different things at once sometimes. Having someone sitting up there in the booth to spot things, to point out symptoms, to, you know, help with those kind of things is fantastic. So I think we are definitely in a better spot this year than we have been in previous years. And I think we're always improving as a game. But yeah, I think, look, the biggest thing I say, I'd love to expect that it's going to be consistent game to game, and head knocks are going to be taken off in each game as they were in the previous game and all that kind of stuff. But just while you've got subjectivity, yeah, it's just not going to happen, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree on your point that, you know, it's something that has been good for the game, the introduction of that. And I think it's something that we just have to stick with and just accept that there are going to be times, as you mentioned, that there will be inconsistencies. But as we move forward and as things progress, as the research base emerges more and more and more, this will become far less subjective and it will become a bit more clear-cut as to, you know, what is, you know, objectively measured here for these players from a head injury perspective. So I think it's a good thing. I think it's, like you said, a work in progress, but I think it's going in the right direction. I think, you know, going back and getting rid of it wouldn't be a step in the right direction, in my opinion. So I think it's something we just have to accept and sort of keep pushing on with. Question number two, Brian, we might sort of wrap up the head injury stuff and talk about the next question, because this was interesting. This guy's been a bit out of sight, out of mind, because he hasn't been cited in NRL since round 10. That's Victor Radley. So he recently got picked in the New South Wales squad off a syndesmosis injury. He would be sort of in that 5 to 6 week range, I think, as it would be coming up for the Perth State of Origin on Sunday. So what do you reckon about Victor getting named in the New South Wales squad, and what would happen hypothetically if he got picked in the 17, in your opinion? Would that be him being right or him being unders, given the time frame that he's had off post-ankle injury?
Oh, I just can't see him getting picked in the 17. Surely not. I can't see how there's not other forwards who would have no concerns surrounding them. I was surprised that he got picked. I assume it's just mainly to get around the boys and the fact that, you know, he's probably in New South Wales' future Origin plans and stuff like that. But yeah, look, like 5 to 6 weeks, yeah, like he's usually going to be pretty fine. But it is over in Perth. So, you know, if COVID sneaks around there and a few guys get ruled out, and yeah, and you look into your 22-man squad to call on, like, you know, I'd be shocked if, take someone like a Ryan Madison who got dropped. Like, is Ryan Madison not going to, you know, be in a better physical position to help your team than Victor Radley? I just think that of that 22-man squad, I would assume Victor Radley is number 22, if that makes sense. As good as he's gone, I think Trent Robertson sort of spoke about he wanted to get him returning in 4 weeks, you know, back when it first happened, and we spoke about that on here.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, as being a bit of a shock. Yeah. But I would assume it's just to get around the boys and, you know, a bit of experience in the squad. But I certainly was surprised that he was picked, especially with it being over in Perth, where you would assume that the guys who are in the 22 are kind of there just in case anything like COVID pops up.
Yeah, it's a good point you make. I sort of thought it was a little bit of a head scratcher as well. I thought, you know, Victor probably needs to get a game or two under his belt for the Roosters before the New South Wales jersey comes knocking for him, especially when you've got such depth in that position in New South Wales. I didn't really see a way for him in, because I see him and even Jake Trbojevic being sort of fairly similar picks in that squad. They sort of play in the middle there. I guess Radley can play a bit of nine if you need him to in a squeeze. But yeah, I thought they were sort of fairly similar in how they sort of would stack up for that squad. So yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it? But I thought definitely on the side of unders, hey.
Oh, big time. Yeah, I think. I can't see him playing, surely not.
No, well, you wouldn't think so. Anyway, I guess that'll be a watch and wait. I wouldn't rule anything out with Freddie the way the
depends how he walks on the grass, mate. How many minerals he soaks up through his feet, and maybe it'll happen.
I don't know, mate. It's a funny sort of thing at the moment with that squad. Whereas very, very calm with old William Slater at the helm there, Brian. I feel very safe with Billy.
Week there'll be a few, you know, racing the clock injuries. Well, there wasn't enough of that before game one, you know, the shithousery that Queensland usually pulls. So I want to see, you know, I want to see a bit more of it. The Dave Taylor fell out of bed, you know, give me something. Give me a bit of, you know, make it Origin week. Like, give me a Queensland injury crisis.
Yeah, I want at least four boys in hospital the day before the game. That if you get out of bed to line up for the game on the Sunday. But, mate, what we'll do is we'll talk about the very last thing that's come through Patreon there. And that was a bit of a different code that we're going to discuss here. We're in the AFL code. So Will Powell, he had a fairly serious ankle injury, which is quite graphic, I think. I think a few people had submitted photos and DMs to you sort of saying, oh, what about this injury? Because I think it was initially reported as a knee dislocation, but it was actually a ankle dislocation, I think, is what ended up happening, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Look, we won't, you know, go too far into it. I know we are an NRL podcast, but for those people listening about, you know, interested in injuries and those kind of things, I think an interesting point here was it's kind of reported as a knee injury. It was that graphic that they didn't even show a replay. So all I got sent were photos of him with his, like, it looked like his lower leg kind of pointing in the wrong direction. But when you looked at the footage of that, it was quite hard to tell. Like, imagine if you dislocate at the knee, the whole lower leg itself will be pointing in the wrong direction, but it's hard to tell that unless you see sort of footage of the injury itself, because just looking at like a, I guess, a still shot or even a video of a guy sort of clutching and his foot pointing in the wrong direction, you don't know where his shin is orientated, or it's very hard to tell, is it just the ankle or is it the whole lower leg? And to be honest with you, if a knee truly dislocates, which is like an emergency situation, that's a really, really very rarely happens, and when it does, it requires an ambulance and all that kind of stuff because there's nerve and blood flow kind of implications. It usually does slide back into place. So it kind of comes out and then slides back in. So for this, when I saw the footage of this and I was being told it was a knee injury, I was very shocked because I was like, if his foot is pointing the wrong direction, it is 99.9% of the time going to be an ankle dislocation or a lower leg fracture. It's not going to be a knee issue as such, and it did turn out to be that. So, yeah, less talking about, I guess, AFL, you know, we won't, like, we can talk about cross-code stuff when we need to and basketball and NFL and whatever. But, yeah, I think the important point there is, yeah, when a foot's pointing in the wrong direction, always start to think lower leg and ankle first.
Yeah, nice one. I think that was my inclination as well. I certainly haven't seen many people in a sporting sense that have had knee dislocations. It's always been probably fairly high mechanism. I think jet ski is the one that comes up with people that I see through the hospital system a little bit. And I do recall one gent, actually. He was at a, you know, some of those big trampolining centers that you can sort of take your kids along to. He actually just bounced the wrong way on a trampoline and his whole knee dislocated. He had, I think, all four ligaments in his knee completely rupture. So that was a really nasty one for a day out on the trampoline. Hey,
those places are keeping me in business, mate. They're full on, those ones. But So that's our questions for the week. So, mate, your expertise, you've knocked up a big score in Supercoach this week. Supercoach Corner for our Supercoach expert. Who have you picked for your player of interest?
Yeah, player of interest was actually a guy I traded in last week, Brian. I sort of got itchy trigger finger, and I took in Will Kennedy last week.
Ooh,
and
good.
I sort of was umming and ahhing about Cam McInnes, do I, don't I? But I ended up going last week. I pulled the trigger on Ronaldo Mulitalo and Will Kennedy, which hasn't worked out enormously well, but I still scored reasonably well. I was just a tick over 1,200 this week. But Will Kennedy's one I was interested in, more not really from an injury perspective, but before he went negative 10 and negative 2 and got a little suspension in there, he was averaging 64 to start this year. So he's averaging around about 63 or 64 up until round 8. And this is on the back end of averaging a very similar amount last year. I think the reason I got him in last week was he was priced in at 360 grand. And I think his break even was 45. So, or 45 or 48, somewhere in that ballpark. And then anyway, he scored 61 just gone. So he should be still sub 400. He's still got a very good draw upcoming. So I guess it's a little bit tricky because they get the Storm, Cowboys and Penrith reasonably quickly, but all those teams are through the origin period. So you have to sort of imagine with the Storm, the Cowboys and Penrith, they will probably be origin affected, you know, either backing up or in the lead up to those games and playing through that bye week. And then after they get through those three games, there's an absolute cakewalk of a schedule for the last seven. Last six games. So that's why he was someone that I was pretty interested in. He was also someone that I was sort of rotating Ruben Garrick through center wing with a few other people. So I think just running him and Tedesco through to round 17 before hopefully I can get a little bit of money out of Will Kennedy and flip him back for Pappenhausen. At that point in time, if Pappenhausen drops down and Will Kennedy sort of pops back up for like the last little bit, or maybe even I might even sell Tedesco depending on how he gets through Origin. I don't know. We'll see how we go with Will Kennedy. But yeah, he's someone that was interesting, a bit of a pod prospect at the start of the year, but he's only at the moment, you know, 1% owned. So not many people have him on the roster. But I think he's one that's probably looking the goods for 17. And I think, yeah, he's attacking stack dependent, but I think he's someone who, with his draw upcoming, he should score reasonably well. I think he's someone that I'm pretty happy to have in my team as of last week, rolling into this week and the weeks moving forward. Hey.
Yep, I like him, mate. I'm definitely, for my trades this week, I'm definitely eyeing off a few sort of those like mid-range guys to free up a bit of cash from guys who I probably, you know, want to get rid of and don't hold to the end. So Kennedy was one. Like, I'm eyeing off a bit of Mitch Barnett as another one. Like, he's starting on an edge for Newcastle. I think he played 80 today, scored 70+. So he's someone who, when he gets 80 on an edge, I love a bit of Mitch Barnett. And for 450, he's really interesting to me. So those kind of guys, because I want to free up a bit of cash to have a red hot crack with the three trades the following week, just burning three trades left, right, and centre, mate. Get them all out of my team, and get me trading. I love it. That's my classic mantra. It's just trade, trade, trade. So what are you doing trade wise this week?
Yeah, this week I think I'm probably going to trade out Ruby Cotter. I think I probably can't see a point in holding on to him for this amount of time. I think he was a little bit of an unexpected origin selection for me. So, and then on the background of the hamstring injury, I can't really see a place for him to stay in. So I'm probably going to go to maybe Madison in the second row, or even I don't have Papali'i in my second row at the moment. Isaiah Papali'i, the Eels fame. Like, so I'll probably go cheap at centre wing with a Storm centre wing. I don't know whether that'll be Iremia, Anderson, or even, you know, Seve, if he's still, you know, got a reasonable break even. But I'll probably flick, Ruby Cotter to, get one of the Eels back rowers in my team. I think that's probably what I want to get done.
Nice, mate. I like it. Our climb up the rankings will surely continue with our expertise, I'm sure. But look, guys,
on that road,
on to the player interview for this week. Look, really, really enjoyed this chat. I think anyone who followed the NRL sort of through from early 2010s onwards knows this guy, and that's Kyle Stanley. 5 ACL injuries in his very, very short career. So retired in his early 20s, after having suffered 5 ACL injuries, which is just a huge number of ACL injuries, obviously, to suffer in a career, let alone, you know, before the age of 23, 24. That's, significant. So he chats us through, pretty much that experience, sort of going through that. He also had a couple of shoulder recos in there as well. So talking through that. But, I think it was another one of those really admirable stories where it was, really eye-opening at how sort of positive he was throughout the entire process, which is always good to hear. So, let's listen to Kyle Stanley.
That may well have been the 75 grand final and beats him. And now Hunter's offloaded to Hornby. Then for Stanley. Out it comes for Chase Stanley. Miracle ball. Flick pass over the sideline.
In that passage of play, Jamie Soward's replacement, Kyle Stanley, sustained a non-contact knee injury, which forced him from the field just 6 minutes in.
And today I'm really pleased to have Kyle Stanley on the podcast. Kyle played 46 NRL games for the Dragons, 3 games for Samoa, but was unfortunately forced into retirement at just 24 years of age after suffering 5 ACL ruptures. We'll obviously go in depth on Kyle's experiences in those 5 knee surgeries, exploring the medical details of the injuries and the rehab, but also the mental challenges and growth he achieved over this time. Now, mate, I know it might not be the most positive topic to talk about at times, but look, I really appreciate you coming on and telling your story. So thanks so much for coming on the show.
No, all good, mate. No worries at all. It's a pleasure to be here.
Good, mate. So, look, a question I always like to ask straight off, and I know you had a couple of ACL ruptures sort of as a teenager that were quite early, but did you have any sort of injury struggles sort of even before that, like coming up, like, you know, when you're early teens and mid-teens and stuff like that, or did it only really start with the knees?
No, mate, it literally started with the knees. You know, I was playing quite a lot of footy, you know, coming through high school and whatnot, and my first one, we were playing, I think it was a Buckley Shield side, and a Buckley Shield team, sorry. And I took the ball off the scrum. Joey Leilua was in the side at that moment, and he goes, "Kyle, give me the ball." And I said, I think I was captain that game, and I said, "Nah," because we were under the pump for quite a bit of time on our trial line. I just thought, you know, I'd just take the ball off the scrum. Next thing you know, bang, my knee just pops. And that was sort of the beginning of the frigging dynasty, to be honest.
And did you have any idea, like, you know, when that happened? Did you, like, you're a young kid, did you think it was pretty serious at the time, or were you kind of like, oh, no, it should, like, you know, it should be okay?
Yeah, mate, I had no idea what was what the ACL entailed, or ACL rupture entailed. I just thought it was there was a pop that happened, and I just thought I popped my kneecap, and, you know, me being a young boy, just thought, you know, I'll probably be back in a couple of weeks, you know, they'll just pop it back in. And I went and seen the physio that day, and then she gave me the bad news, and she initially thought, yeah, it's the ACL, which, again, I had no idea what an ACL was. Yep. And then the scans confirmed it later that week that it was an ACL rupture.
Yeah, and so how old were you at that point?
I think it was 15.
Right. So as a 15-year-old, mate, how do you go with rehab and stuff like that? Like, how's your – I think, like, obviously we'll talk about your future rehabs in time, but looking back on it, how did you think that rehab sort of went as a 15-year-old?
I think it went as good as it could be, to be honest.
Nice.
You know, I was under the watch of a NRL, doctor. I went and seen a good knee specialist, you know, and I got all the good treatment. I guess the rehab side of things, and from my end, you know, I did the best I could do. You know, I think the first one I did, they took my I think it was my left hamstring.
Yep.
And used it as an ACL, and you know, a year later, I played one game on the return, and then bang, it went again.
And that was going to be my next question, is sort of how long. So, like, obviously coming back from that, you're 12 months later, so you're now a 16-year-old. How did you feel on return? Were you pretty confident at that stage, or were you still a bit shaky on the knee?
I think as a younger sort of player, you know, that sort of stuff, you know, it doesn't play in your mind as much as, I suppose, when you get older.
Yeah.
I just thought, you know, it's just a surgery. You know, I'll be back playing the way I had been, but it wasn't meant to be. You know, like the first game, I think I went and done a charge down, and then bang, you know, the knee went. I think it was 10 minutes into a second half of my first game back.
And did you?
But in terms of, did it play in my mind? No, it really didn't.
Yeah. Did you know straight away that you'd done it that second time, having done it before once?
I did, mate. Yeah, I did. I knew that pain.
Yeah.
I knew that pain, and I went into the sheds, and I sort of turned the sheds upside down, and I think my brother was playing first grade the next game, because it was in the 20s. I was playing in the 20s, the Toyota Cup at the time, and I'd flipped the change rooms upside down, because I knew what was going to be my next sort of year of rugby league in terms of, you know, rehab and whatnot. I just knew what I had to go through again. So, yeah, it was a bit hard.
Yeah, and that's probably a question I always like asking, is as you're approaching these, and I mean, we're talking about your second ACL here, but then obviously we've got 3, 4, 5 as well, like, because you've been through it before, do you think it makes it harder, sort of knowing what's ahead, or easier because you know what you need to do? Like, how did you find that balance?
I think initially, you know, you're like, far out, here we go again, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's like another 6 months, but I think we actually took longer the second one, because it happened so quick from you know, my first game.
Yep.
So I think we actually took 10 months.
Okay.
The second one.
Yep.
So, but yeah, look, I think once you get over that, you know, poor me stage, you know, you just knuckle down as anyone would, and you just get the rehab done. But yeah, the process in returning for the second one was 10 months.
Yeah, and what did they use for the ACL graft for the second one? Do you remember?
They used my hamstring again.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
And did you find you had any struggles with, like, hamstring strains or anything like that after they used the hamstrings, or not too bad?
Mate, no, I didn't. I was quite fortunate, actually. Like, you sort of work on that in your rehab, so you got to strengthen those hammies up,
yep,
just so, you know, you don't get those strains and whatnot. But I didn't have any troubles with it, with my hammies anyway. Obviously, you know, quite further down the track, you know, as I got older, I sort of did, but not initially, no.
Yeah, and another question, I think, like, especially with these early rehabs when you haven't had that experience and around ACLs as well, I find a lot of younger guys, because it's experience of a lot of people going through ACL injuries where, you know, after, oh, let's say 3 months, you actually feel quite good. Like, your knee, especially if you haven't had major, you know, surgery before and you don't understand that ACL side of things, you actually feel quite good. Did you have any struggles of being frustrated at, like, the rehab people, you know, the physios, the doctors sort of holding you back because you're like, my knee feels fine? Or did you kind of, you know, understand that it was a process you needed to go through?
No, look, I was quite open to the fact that the physios and the surgeons knew best.
Yep.
So I didn't get frustrated. Probably the only frustration was throughout the whole rehab, or throughout all rehabs, was that when you're feeling good, you can push yourself when you're running. Mm. So, but when you push yourself when you're running, your knee blows up. Quite a fair bit, and there's fluid in there.
Yeah.
So that was probably the most frustrating, because when you start feeling good, you push yourself harder, obviously, just as an athlete. And then, you know, when you finish the run, and, you know, 20 minutes after you run, your knee just swells up, and you're like, far out. So you won't be able to do that back-to-back running that you want to do or that you plan to do in your rehab program. That was probably the most frustrating thing.
And did you do you remember back to those first two, like, obviously ACL ruptures, did you have any significant sort of secondary damage, whether it be to an MCL, meniscus, anything like that with either of those first two?
I was quite fortunate. The first one, I got a bit of meniscus shaved off, but the rest of them, it was just clean ACL snaps.
Yeah, wow.
Which is quite lucky, yeah, because as we know, if that meniscus goes, you know, it's bone on bone, and that's when the real problems start occurring, you know, for your late, especially later on in life.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? Because it's that shock absorber for your knees. So I was quite fortunate in that regard.
Yeah, no, definitely. So, look, moving forward, so that's your two on your left. We come to 2012. I think I went back and had a look. So it was your first week sort of in the NRL back from a hamstring injury, I think. Jamie Soward got ruled out late and you come in to replace him. Sort of, wasn't it, like, I actually found video of the incident. I wouldn't say it was, like, your typical, like, ACL changing direction kind of thing. You were throwing a pass, you did plant your leg, and you felt it go. Talk me through sort of how that went, being the first one on your right leg.
Yeah, I remember that day clearly, actually. It was I think it was a local derby game down at Wynn Stadium.
Yep.
And Sarah did pull out later, and I got the call from Pricey saying, you know, you're going to be playing your preferred position. And I was over the moon, so yeah. I was quite happy in that aspect. And yeah, like I think I was throwing a long pass to Benny Hornby, and as I've done it, I've caught it from the left hand side, and I've tried to bullet it to Benny Hornby as fast as I could. And as I've done that, I've planted my right foot, and then it's just buckled. My knee just buckled, and I knew straight away. I was like, no, this can't be happening. Because as soon as like, and this goes for everyone that, like, you know, that I don't like seeing on rugby league, as soon as someone grabs, like, buckles at their knee and they grab, like, sort of their shin area, I sort of be like, please don't be an ACL, you know what I mean? Because I sort of know that sort of, you know, feeling that people get there. They clutch for their shin straight away because it comforts that pain.
Yeah.
So I knew straight away I'd done it. And, you know, I was absolutely shattered.
Yeah, because that was a question. I actually sort of went back and found the news reports from surrounding that, and there was they kind of interviewed a few of the team, you know, medical staff, and they were saying that they were hopeful it was only a meniscus injury at one point. Was that actually legitimate? Is that what they were communicating to you, or was it kind of that, like, everyone knew it was an ACL straight away?
Yeah, I'm not too sure. I knew what I'd done. So I'm not too sure what was being said around, you know, the medical staff side of things, but I knew, you know, when I was laying there, I remember Big Dill came in too and seen me, because we were quite close when he was at the Dragons, and he was in and around being an ambassador, and he was absolutely shattered for me. But I knew straight away, mate, as soon as I came off of that field and I laid in the physio room, I just knew that pain. And anyone that's done ACL knows that pain, you know you've done it straight away.
Yeah. And then, so once again, like, this is the first one on your good knee. You know, you've been through two on your bad knee. How did you find this rehab process, sort of, you know, with the a whole fresh knee approach, I guess?
Yeah, it's same mindset, you know. Like, yep. it's just like a, you know, here we go again. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't get easier.
I was going to say, being in an NRL system now, like, obviously you had an NRL, like, you know, I guess you had an NRL doctor and stuff looking over you for the first two. But for this one, you're in, you know, you're within an NRL club. Did you find that made it a little bit easier, sort of having those things at your fingertips?
Yeah, it definitely does play a part. But at the same time, you know, I think it was my second year of NRL. Or I think third year or whatever it was. I sort of, as a young bloke, you know, when you get injured, and I think I speak on behalf of a lot of players, you know, when you get injured, you do feel isolated from the main squad. And I suppose as a young bloke, that was probably one of the hardest things.
Yeah.
You don't feel part of it. And I know you probably shouldn't think of that, but it's hard not to, because, you know, when you're training, the main squad isn't, or when the main squad's training, you're not. You know what I mean? So
yeah, 100%.
That was probably one of the biggest hurdles for me mentally,
especially as a young player. Just, yeah,
that's right. And I just think, you know, it did play an effect on you know, on my mind anyway.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, not being part of that main squad, which essentially I was, but you know, as I said, you know, you're training at different times. You're not in and around the main group and all that stuff.
Yeah, and you're not doing what you love, right? Like, you love playing footy. You like that's what you enjoy. You don't enjoy being there doing, you know, knee extensions and squats and different things.
Yeah, correct. No, of course.
So, look, this is probably, I guess, the most, I guess, interesting, like, obviously it's all very, very, you know, I guess, valuable insight from yourself around these injuries. But this next one, I think, is probably one of the more unique ACL situations, but probably, I guess, the most disappointing from your perspective, I imagine. Was it 4 months? I think it was 4 months after you did your right. You're at home and you slip over on the wet. Is that right?
Yeah. My tires outside, and it didn't feel like anything at the time.
Yep.
And then I went and got scans, and initially they couldn't see anything wrong with my ACL, which, you know, obviously I was over the moon. But as they looked closer, it was higher up. It was higher up on the ligament, so it was sort of in the tunnels.
Yep.
And that's where they found it. And I was just as you can imagine, I was absolutely shattered. And you know, I've just wasted, but the 4 months that I did doing rehab, you know, has just gone down the drain. And that was definitely, you know, the hardest one to come by, because, you know, like I was at a stage where I was feeling great. You know, my body was in, you know, good shape. I was feeling good. And then bang, for it to be taken away like that, you know, it was quite shattering.
Yeah, well, that 4 months, that was kind of what I was talking about before, where you start to feel pretty good in that rehab process. So for that to happen must have just been, really tough.
Yeah, it was. And that was probably definitely the hardest one to come through. But, yeah, it was tough. It was tough at the time.
And so they've used both your hamstrings for the first two on the left. Where did you go for grafts for these next two on the right?
So, I think they went through my left hamstring. Oh, no, sorry. They went to the third one. They got a hamstring from the, I think it was called the bone bank. Is it called the bone bank?
Yeah, like a donor graft.
Donor graft. So, I got a hamstring, and that one failed. And then the last one that I got, it was the Achilles that they put in. So, it was a thicker one.
Yep.
And that was the sort of the last one after the slipping over, and it ended up failing as well.
Oh, it failed. Yeah, right. So that was and that was going to be a question about the fifth one. But so you've had that. Did you have to? You mentioned the bone tunnels there, and that's probably something for people listening. Effectively, that can be a bit of a complication too, because the bone tunnels, when you've done your ACL so many times, where they have to drill, it can kind of wear away. Did you have to go through any kind of bone grafting at any stage?
Yeah, so I actually, after that one happened, I went to another knee specialist, Leo Pincheski. He worked out of North Sydney at the Mater Hospital. Now, it was recommended to get my tunnels, you know, scanned just to see how they're going and whatnot, and just to see how they're traveling and, you know, the damage that's happened over the course of the years.
Yeah.
Now, from his opinion, he thought my tunnels were too far. I think it was anterior.
Yes.
Obviously because of the ACL. So he actually re-drilled holes in my knee. So it was a two-stage procedure. So he's filled my original tunnels with artificial bone.
Yep.
And that was a 3-month, you know, wait for it to catch onto my, my bones.
Yes.
And then he redrills the holes after that, and then puts the ACL in. If that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. Yep, absolutely. No, I know exactly what you're talking about, but I think that's something that, like, you know, I guess not a lot of people, because especially, you know, having 4 or 5 ACLs isn't all that common. But once you get to that stage, it's not just a simple ACL reconstruction a lot of the time, like, you know, as you're talking about there. It's like a more complex process.
Yeah, it definitely was. And, you know, I ended up, you know, during this whole, from the start of that, bone graft filling, I changed everything. I changed the way I ate.
Yep.
I changed the way I slept. I was doing everything I could just to get my body possibly in tip-top shape, you know, leading coming into this surgery, into the ACL surgery. And, I did everything right. The rehab through that one was pretty good. I think we took 12 months off for that one.
Yeah.
Just to make sure, you know, everything's right, you know, my body mechanics are working. Because I remember down in Wollongong, Andrew Gray and Dan Lawson, they actually started videoing me how I ran.
Oh, yeah.
And they noticed quite a change since I obviously came into first grade. I can't remember what exactly it was, but my hips were sinking quite a fair bit.
Okay.
And, just my body mechanics weren't working right and all this stuff. And that sort of played on my mind as well. As you can imagine, you know, you're just coming back from ACL, you're saying that, you know, my body mechanics aren't right. And I suppose that's just part and parcel of, you know, being out of the game and, you know, not having that constant, you know, run of injury-free, you know.
Performance.
Time.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, like, and I think I got an insight to it there because, like, you know, you're 4 ACLs in and you're telling me, you know, you're doing everything that you possibly can to get your body right, which is just super admirable, mate. Because my next question I had here was, you know, you're 4 ACLs in, you're still a young guy, like you haven't had a clean run, as you said, injury-wise in the NRL. Are you getting over it at any point? Like, do you have any stages where you're just like, oh, I'm like, you know, I'm over this, I'm done with this, or are you still pretty positive at this stage?
I was still pretty, you know, optimistic. It's always there, you know, the glass is definitely half full.
Yeah, nice.
Sort of guy. But yeah, like I said, I changed everything in my life, you know, like I changed my diet. I was doing a lot of, I think it was the oxygen chambers were coming in, yep. You know, and I was going to them quite a fair bit just to, you know, refill my body with the good stuff. You know, I was on fish oils, I was on, you know, every supplement, you know, visible to be playing in the NRL just to get my body right. And look, I did come out of that, you know, quite confident.
Yep.
You know, I was, I can't remember the actual game I returned, but I think I played the 4 Nations that following year for Samoa.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, the 3 Nations, sorry, the 3 Nations.
Yep.
Was it?
Yeah, 3 Nations. Like Yeah. And so
I suppose that's a positive.
Yeah, and did you feel like coming off that 4th one, you know, you've obviously done a lot of hard work. I know you can't remember the exact game, but do you remember in general feeling quite confident on your return to play again?
Yeah, definitely. I think that year, you know, I was in and out of first grade. I was going down from the Cutters to NRL, you know, quite a fair bit, and which was, you know, it is what it is. You know, after coming back from 4 knee surgeries, I think that's pretty, you know, reasonable to be, you know, going in and out of first grade. Obviously, you know, when you can't string a full season together, that's what's going to happen. But yeah, I feel like I had a good year that year. I think we had a strong Cutters side, Illawarra Cutters side, sorry, and we made it to the semis. And yeah, I think I played the last game against Newcastle that year. And then, yeah, was picked in the Samoan side. So it was quite a good year that year.
And how was it, like, you know, 4 ACLs, mate, and then, you know, you're able to represent your, you know, your country. Was that, like, a really satisfying moment?
Yeah, definitely. I think when you've been through what I've been through. I'm not crying out for or anything, but
no.
when you get to represent your country at the highest level, I think it's one of the most satisfying things that you can ever do. And it was just like I let out a massive, breath of air.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, far out. How good's this, Like, I was on the Tri Nations with some players that, I looked up to as a kid in terms of Frankie Pritchard and that, and I was like, far out. I can't believe what I've been through. I'm actually here. So
yeah.
That was definitely, a massive feat for me.
That's awesome, mate. Awesome. So 2015, you signed for the Sharks, and then it's not long, unfortunately. This is when the fifth ACL rupture happens, playing reserve grade for Newtown. Look, mate, I guess talk me through this day. Like, it just must have been a really, really tough one.
Yeah, I just got goosebumps as you said that, because yeah. I went straight from the Tri Nations to Cronulla. So I'm gonna pump myself up here. I was in tip-top shape coming out of Cronulla preseason.
Yeah.
I was the fastest I've ever been. I was the leanest I've ever been, and I was weighing at a good weight, as a running 5'8". What Cronulla did for me there was, was unbelievable.
Yep.
Andrew Gray, who was at the Dragons, for 15 years, he actually went to Cronulla that year as well. So he understood my body, which was a massive bonus for me.
Nice.
So he understood the loading and whatnot, and all that stuff that I had to go through. So I think that played a massive role in terms of why I was in tip-top shape at Cronulla.
Yeah.
As you said, that round one game at Newtown, I was playing really, really well. Had a really good first half. We're playing at Henson Park, and then I think it was 5 minutes in the second half, I've gone back and to chase a kick. Someone put a kick in. I've gone back, picked it up, regathered it. And then I went to step off my right foot, and then bang. I just knew straight away. I dropped the ball. I think everyone was in shock, because I picked the ball up, I stepped, and then I just stopped.
Yeah.
I dropped the ball, and I've just walked off the field.
Oh, no.
Because I knew from that point that my career was over.
Oh, mate. That's really...
And I'm getting goosebumps. I'm getting goosebumps sort of talking about it. As you can imagine, I was a complete mess in the sheds. I remember my son coming running in, and he goes, "Daddy, what's wrong? What's wrong?" He vaguely remembers it to this day. But it was quite an emotional day for me, because I knew then that, I just signed a 1-year deal with the Sharks, backing myself to have a good year. And then bang, round one for reserve grade, for Newtown.
Oh, mate.
One ego. So I sort of just knew, the writing was on the wall for me.
Yeah, and I think that was an interesting question, because, the injury was in March, and then there was no, official announcement of retirement till I think October. So what, obviously you have a fair idea in March that you're going to retire, as you say, the writing's almost on the wall. What happens over that time? Are you, do you get another reconstruction and kind of, are you going through the rehab to try and maybe get back? Or after it happens in March, are you kind of just like, nah, that's done, and it just didn't get announced till October?
Yeah, so I got into the surgery quite quickly. I got into the next week or something, and I just had to have time to think about it, to think about what actually I wanted to do. I didn't leave the house for quite a fair bit of time. I just didn't know what I wanted to do. Footy had been my life since I was a young kid, and I just didn't know what I wanted. Andrew Gray at the time was, trying to get me back into doing rehab and stuff like that. But I just refused to get to go in.
Yeah.
I just refused to, because I think deep down I knew.
Yep.
But I didn't want to come to terms with it.
Yes.
I sort of said to them, I'm giving it away. And that's hence why it was a sort of late.
Yeah, delayed.
Late announcement.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, so just the quick one again, this is your fifth ACL. Where did they go for the graft for number five? Do you remember?
Yeah, they went for, I just said, listen, just give me the thickest Achilles you can get, because, this is going to be mine for life. I won't be playing rugby league ever again. So just give me the best one you can find.
Yep.
And I did that one with Anthony Leong at Miranda, which he was outstanding as well. So I was quite fortunate to have, you know, all these, you know, very good knee specialists over the course of my, you know, career. But the rugby league game just wasn't made for my body, I guess. Or my body wasn't made for that stuff.
And you mentioned earlier, like you said, you know, your meniscus and that was pretty good early on. Is that ring true for these ones as well? You're still just mainly like a clean ACL rupture. You maintain most of your meniscus and stuff like that?
Yeah, mate. Like I said, I was quite fortunate in that regard to have that meniscus intact still. Yeah, as I said, the left one, there was just a bit of, they had to shave a bit off.
Yep.
And everyone after that, you know, everyone's still intact. Just quite fortunate.
Oh, huge. That's huge. As you say, particularly for your mid to long term. And even I find, you know, returning from those ones that have significant meniscus tears, it makes it a lot harder. One thing I wanted to touch on, and we talked about it a bit there, is that mental side of it. Like, obviously, after the fifth one, mentally would have been, you know, as tough as any. But throughout that, you know, throughout that stage, did you seek any professional help around the mental side of things? Like, and this is for all five of them, or did you just kind of lean on your support network? How did you personally sort of approach the mental side of these injury battles?
Yeah, I think as a you know, a male and, you know, sort of a youngish or young bloke, yes, you know, I think we're seen to be, you know, the alpha males and they can handle anything, yes, and whatnot, but it's definitely not the case, mate, because at the end of the day, you know, we're all human and we all, you know, get emotional at days and stuff like that. And I did seek professional help because it was having an effect on my family life and whatnot. You know, I just wasn't enjoyable to be around.
Yeah.
And it did affect my family life. And I had to go and see someone and talk to someone about it because, as I said, I just wasn't an enjoyable person to be around. And which is, you know, as I said, we're all human.
Absolutely.
You know, we've all got emotions, mate. And it was quite hard. It was quite tough. But, yeah, but the support network around me, you know, they were awesome. So, and I also had two young kids as well. So they were definitely, you know, my reasoning to push through, you know, those hard times.
Yeah, for sure.
As we lean on our kids, you know, quite a lot.
No, definitely, mate. And one thing I did find around that mental side of things too, and I found really admirable from yourself, mate, I was reading an interview with Cameron King, who said that I think it was when he suffered his second or his third ACL, he credited you, you know, and the contact that he had with you, like almost messaging or talking every day that sort of helped him through that. Is that something that you sort of sought to do? Is because you've been through that, you wanted to help others?
Yeah, well, me and King are actually, we're best mates. So, nice. we were on the hooter quite a fair bit, you know what I mean? Like, we were on the phone constantly, and we both played a role in each other's, you know, rehab processes.
Yep.
He's a great guy, man. He's a great family guy. He's living up in North Queensland at the moment with his wife and kid. But, yeah, we definitely helped each other through that time anyway, you know. And every time I see someone go down in the NRL with the ACL, you know, my heart bleeds for him.
Yeah.
Because I just know the process that they're going to be going through. But in saying that, you know, everyone from back then when I had mine done to now, I think, you know, the medical side of things and stuff like that may have improved.
Yeah, definitely.
And I'm not saying, you know, it was bad back then, but you know, as you evolve with time, you know, things get better.
Yep.
And, you know, I just wish no one in the world to do this, especially at an elite level.
Yeah, no, definitely, mate. As you say, it's definitely improving. There's improving rehab processes, surgeries, all that kind of stuff. So it's definitely right. Last thing, mate, I wanted to check, like, how's your knee function today? Is it something that, you know, do you need any regular treatment for? Do you do, you know, rehab, prehab, that kind of thing? Is it something that affects your day-to-day, or are you pretty happy with where your knees are at?
No, I'm pretty happy, mate. I think the biggest thing for me, like when I retired, I just didn't want to put weight on because I think the excess weight that people that you can carry around, you know, your joints don't like that. So
no.
I sort of just said to myself, you know, let's just keep the weight off. We'll see how it goes. And I haven't had any problems since. I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, there's the odd day there where, you know, I overdo it, you know, go going for a walk or a run and whatnot, you know, it blows up a bit. But I recommend both my shoulders are probably the worst because I've had recos on them, and mate, they just get so stiff of a morning, and they're probably worse than my knees, to be honest.
Oh mate, shoulder recos, I didn't even come across those. When did you have to go through that?
Yeah, no, I think my first one was at the end of 2010, and my second one was at the end of 2011.
Yeah, right. So still all at that young age, mate, far out. You really got knocked around.
Yeah. Oh, it's not. It's one of the years. I can't remember exactly which years it was, but yeah, it was definitely at the end of 2010 and maybe 2011. Yeah.
Yeah. And do you play any social sport or anything like that, or mainly just kind of exercise and keep fit?
Yeah, no, I can't play any sport, mate. I try to play golf every now and then, but I can't hit a golf ball to save my life.
We'll blame the shoulder recos, mate. We'll blame the shoulder recos.
Yeah, no, 100%, man, 100%.
Now, look, mate, a fun one to finish that I always ask everyone. Now, you don't have to throw anyone under the bus if you don't want to, but certainly the first one I always find is interesting. I like to get a nomination for the toughest teammate you ever played with, so the guy who just would, you know, no matter what the injury was just a maniac, would push through anything. And then also, if you do want to throw someone under the bus, the softest teammate, so the guy who would break a nail and not be happy. So have you got a nomination for either of those?
Oh man, I think the toughest bloke that I've ever played with would definitely have to be Dean Young. What he went through, and what I realise now, what he went through back in 2010 to get his body right, you know, for every game that he played.
Yeah,
that guy's an absolute warrior, because his knees were so bad, and he actually got told at the beginning of that year that he'd never play rugby league again.
Oh wow!
And for him to go through the season and then win a premiership and score as well on the grand final, I think just the you know, the demons that he would have faced, especially after a game, you know, he was bang ice, bang on straight on both knees, and yeah, he was an absolute warrior. He was an absolute warrior, Dino.
Yeah, no, I've heard that. Yeah, he pushed through some pretty crazy stuff, especially in the latter stages of his career. That's for sure. But look, mate, really appreciate you coming on. As I said, I really love doing these interviews, especially with you guys who have been through, you know, significant injury struggles. Because I think it's good to give fans an insight into the human beings behind these players that they see as superheroes on the screen and stuff like that, and know that, as you said, you know, we're all human. We all have struggles, and especially, you know, going through five ACLs, mate, I think you've more than had your fair share. So I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your story, mate.
No, thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me, mate. It's been a pleasure, and I love listening to the podcast, mate. It's been awesome.
No, that's awesome, mate. Really, really, yeah, really valuable chat today. So hopefully we talk again in the future.
No worries, Brian. Thanks a lot. Have a good day, mate.
Carl Stanley claps on the pace, and Stanley bursts through for St George Illawarra's second try.
And it goes on for Stanley, back to Nightingale. Well, what a try!
Kicking, Carl Stanley gets a double. Terrific try from the young Dragon. The kick from Hornby was perfectly weighted, and after an almighty battle, the Dragons will win this one.
He hasn't had a lot of football, Carl Stanley, but on two occasions he's had to finish tries and done it beautifully.
Alrighty, that was Carl Stanley. Yeah, look, once again, really appreciate the play. Any players, whether he past or present, jumping on for a bit of a chat, really enjoy it. And yeah, the feedback I've got from the players is that they really enjoy it too, and you guys seem to be loving them as well. So they might dry up soon, because certainly trying to reach out to as many as I can. So if you know of anyone who you want to, you know, you want to hear from or something like that, reach out to me or reach out to them and suggest to them to come on the show. But yeah, James, what did you think of Carl?
Yeah, another great one, Brian. So thanks for pulling that one together yet again. And similar sort of theme that I sort of seem to say this most weeks, but just when Kyle was mentioning, you know, had this Rico and then this one and this one and this one, and never dropped his bundle, never, you know, kick stones, never said, oh, why me? This is so unfair. It was always just, yep, I'm on to the next thing. I'm moving on. I've got a plan. I'm moving forward. I'm going to do my rehab. I just can't get my head around that just from my perspective, because I would be that person that drops my bundle and throws my bottle lip up and kicks stones and has a bit of a whinge and a bit of a cry, I think. So I really admire people that have that disposition and that strength of character and that ability just to move forward to the next thing and not get stuck on, you know, what's been and done and just go, well, that happened, but you know, this is what I need to do next and this is what I'll do next and I'll keep building and I saw the goal to do this and achieve this. It's very, very, very impressive when you hear people sort of talk about things like that very frankly. And, you know, times it must have been really, really tough. But, yeah, I struggled to get my head around that, Brian. So it was a good listen, really good listen.
Yeah, mate, I say to my patients who are going through ACLs, you know, you're bound to get at least one, you know, period of time throughout the rehab where I almost say, when it happens here, come to me and we'll take a bit of a break. And it's not that we go completely off rehab. You know, they still have a base sort of level that they have to perform. There's going to be a time with most people where you're a little bit down during such a long rehab. And so take a little bit of a break, have a bit of a siesta, more for your mental health than anything. That's kind of a mantra that I have through my guys who are, you know, whether it be an ACL reco, Achilles, shoulder reco, anything like that. I always kind of have that approach. I have that chat with them. If you get to a point during the rehab where you're just not about it, let's just have a bit of a breather and recharge the batteries. One thing I want to discuss with you, mate, physio to physio. Look, we're talking five ACL injuries here. And I was like going into this going, this guy is going to have cooked meniscus. Like there's going to be not much of it left. And one little trim and apart from that, fairly clean meniscus. Like he obviously didn't win the lotto by having five ACL injuries.
Well, he might as well.
But I think he lost the lotto, but then he won the lotto. Like that is crazy, right?
Yeah, that's incredible. Look, so in terms of his five ACL recos, he only really had one sort of small debridement in one of these menisci through those five.
Is that he was that he was told about anyway. Like, I don't know whether something's happened, but for those listening who don't, you know, might not, like, it's for the ACL to tear in the knee, it is a traumatic shift that occurs. Like, you've probably seen in my videos, right, like, where that shin bone just shifts forward, like, violently and then snaps back in. There's a lot of force that goes through there. It happens because the muscles don't fire for a microsecond, so all that force goes through the knee joint. The meniscus are the shock-absorbing pads in the knee. For that, like, for there to be that much force going through the knee to tear the ACL, but those meniscus or his meniscus to not have significant enough damage to require surgical intervention, like four times over effectively, is crazy. Like if I get an ACL once in a season that comes in, it's a clean ACL with no meniscus issues, I'm like jumping for joy for that person. Like it's obviously shitty that they suffered an ACL injury, but as we know, particularly mid to long term, any significant meniscus damage, like I've got a guy who I'm rehabbing through, he had an ACL tear, but four meniscus tears at the same time. Mate, it is an absolute minefield. Like his progress is so slow. It is really gradual, and I can almost guarantee you it's because of those meniscus tears. So it's really, really tough. And then for him also mid to long term, that's going to be really, you know, tough for him to keep on top of as well. So yeah, I just found that
I'd be really interested to see how that plays out.
I just found that fascinating for Stanley to have effectively what you're talking about, four ACL injuries that by his understanding didn't require too much intervention for his meniscus.
Incredible.
Yeah, bonkers. All right. That's a wrap for this week. As always, if you like the pod, review, recommend to a friend. Look, reviews just flooding in, mate. You know, I can't deal. Like, if I get as many DMs about, you know, can you give me an update on Player X, the other ones that I get that just flood the inbox are, you know, 5-star, 4-star, not many 1-stars, thankfully. But, people seem to be enjoying the pod, which is good. Hopefully you continue to enjoy it. Let anyone know if they're interested in this kind of thing. Give us a listen. And once again, if you like more info like this, patreon.com/NRLphysio. But, James, we will talk. Oh, this is interesting. We can talk about this live. I'm sure people will be interested in this. It is Origin next Sunday night. That is usually our recording
time.
Mate, last Origin, mate, I was up till like 2 o'clock in the morning afterwards. So yeah. I'm just putting it out there that I would probably be down for a post Origin record if you can swing that. But anyway,
Brian, I'm always down for all things Origin and Rugby League, so we'll probably make that happen.
I'll just float it out there. It'll be good for the boys. Whether we win or lose, I'm sure we'll get a few New South Wales listeners if Queensland lose to, you know, bask in our disappointment. But if we win, you know, all the Queenslanders will be up and about. So, yeah, look, let's go for that for the moment. I'm sure everybody enjoyed hearing us doing the nuts and bolts. But, yeah, guys, enjoy your week. Enjoy your footy. The rep round, man, I'm so keen for the rep round. Like, outside of Origin, get around the internationals. Get it going because that is the future of the game, in my opinion. And, yeah, James, I will talk to you next week after Origin.
Sounds good, Brian. We're going to look at my schedule for the Monday after Origin when I go to work tomorrow, and we'll make that happen next Sunday night.
Love it, mate. All right, have a good week, guys.
Suspected broken left fibula.
Suffering syndesmosis.
After that stem cell injury that he's come back from?
That's about it, mate.